All right. Two announcements to reiterate from remarks. One is that we are extending the deadline for base acre reallocation and yield updates to March 31st. This is primarily, I think, a response and reaction to concerns that we've received from producers primarily in the South about the process that they're undertaking to get their numbers right. We're still maintaining the March 31 deadline for the ARC and PLC election at this point. We'll monitor that to see the response and reaction, but we really are encouraging producers now who have made the decision to let their local office know so that we don't get a situation where we clog the system at the end of the deadline. Second is to reiterate the nature of the call that took place earlier today, where eight former secretaries of agriculture, representing all of the living ag secretaries since President Carter, representing both Republican and Democratic administrations, urging Congress to authorize trade promotion authority for President Obama, giving him the same authority that every president since President Ford has had, and in essence, every authority to help finalize trade agreements in the right way since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and indicating their support for trade and the importance of trade to agriculture. That letter's gone out, and I think it does reflect broad-based consensus that trade historically has been bipartisan and is an area where there can be agreement between Republicans and Democrats. And the hope is that as Congress considers this very important piece of legislation, understands the context of the negotiations relative to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the enormous opportunity that represents, and the momentum it could build for not only getting TPP done, but also engaging aggressively in our efforts to develop a trade agreement with the EU, which would be the largest trade agreement of its kind in the history of the world. And I think it is important to make sure that people do understand the national security imperative of this particular trade discussion, because if we basically cede leadership in negotiations and discussions about various standards and various access issues to China, it will not necessarily bode well for our economy and for agriculture. Yesterday, we also launched, as part of the Rural Council that I chair, the President launched a series of executive actions which are designed to encourage exports across the board, particularly those that are rural in nature. Part of this involves the Commerce Department putting together a team that will provide technical assistance to businesses in rural areas that wish to export. Part of it is a competition that Commerce will essentially fund and provide resources to get the technology that allows us to commercialize products that may be subject to export more quickly. Part of it is the U.S. Postal Service announcing that they're going to conduct 75 seminars, if you will, or meetings in rural areas to discuss how exports can be facilitated with Postal Service input on how custom forms get filled out, how to simplify that process, how to make sure your packaging is accurate, correct, and done in the way that reduces the cost of exports. So there is an ongoing effort by this administration and by the Rural Council to focus on the development of the rural economy and made in rural America. We are pointing out to companies that 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States. Less than 5% of our companies export, so there's an opportunity there. And of those who do, most of those companies only export to one country. So once you learn the system, it's relatively easy for you to do exports in multiple countries. So this is all designed to create a greater awareness of the positive benefits of trade and the terrific opportunity that the American economy has, businesses, services, and certainly agriculture. Okay, so with that, Ken.
Mr. Secretary, I wanted to tell you you're on time today, so I
all right.
Want you to overlook the last time I wasn't. On this election of which you're going to go with PRC, ARC, at the end of the month of March, haven't already told them that if they don't make any selection, you've already made it for them. So all they have to do is go in and change what the USDA would mark down for a farmer.
I wouldn't phrase it that way, Ken. I think it's essentially you have the election, you have the option. We're encouraging you to exercise that option. Obviously, at the end of the day, if for some reason you decide not to make the election, then there has to be something that fills in that space, and we will fill it in. But that's not what we want. What we want is for people to do what they need to do. I will tell you, we've had over close to 5,000, roughly 5,000 meetings of our teams and producers and land-grant university officials to educate people about this important election they have to make. We have had over 130,000 hits on the various computer models that allow people to sort of plug their numbers in and figure out what's best for each farm. We've sent out postcards to nearly 3 million postcards to remind people of these upcoming dates. So we really do want people to participate. We want people to make the right decision on each farm as only they can make it, because they know their operation and they have a sense of what's going to happen in the various commodities that they're growing. So I'd phrase it a little bit differently. They have until March 31st. Encourage folks. I mean, nearly 500,000 folks have already made that decision, so obviously people are making the decision. We want to make sure that they continue to do that.
And that was prior to that, they had four farmers, and every one of them said that they went through the process, and they all said it went quite smoothly. Now, admittedly, four is not every farmer in America.
I'll take it.
But what would you credit to the situation here in terms of technology? Where are we in terms of technology at the local office level? And also, how are you working to make this whole thing work a lot smoother? And also, do you feel, just by those four people, and I know you seem pretty good about that, do you feel vindicated that through all the years of people saying that technology was bad, and all of this, your efforts to pay it off?
Well, I appreciate the question. And let me first of all give credit where credit is due, which is to the hardworking folks in those FSA offices. Because they have worked diligently, and I think they've done an extraordinary job. When you add on to all of what they've had to do in embracing new technology and learning the new systems and new programs, they also had to get those 590,000 checks out in the mail to disaster folks. They had to also make sure that folks understood their options relative to the dairy margin protection program. So they've had a lot of work to do, but I think they worked hard. They've worked well. I think we have improved our technology because it is a little simpler. It takes a little less time. The accessing of records is no longer solely reliant on paper records, which are obviously difficult sometimes to find. They get misplaced. They get mixed up. That stuff's not happening because now we've got access to these records electronically. We still have work to do, and we are going to continue working this year on acreage reporting and trying to get that done in an appropriate and proper way. I also want to thank the farmers and producers for those who understand that, you know, once you've made up your mind, there's no reason to waiting. You know, if you make up your mind, you go in, you make a decision, and, you know, a week later something happens in the market, makes you doubt that, you can still change it prior to March 31st. So I appreciate the fact that folks have stepped up. And I also credit the Farm Bill Working Group, which Deputy Secretary Hardin has led. They meet weekly. We set this process up. I asked the folks to set up a proactive process even before the Farm Bill was signed that would allow us to prioritize and organize the implementation of the Farm Bill and have all entities within USDA talking to each other about those priorities so that we didn't have rural development competing against RMA, competing against FSA for their rule or their regulatory action or their decision by the secretary. So they set up a prioritization list, and then each week I get a list of decisions that have to be made. And for the most part, those decisions have been made within 24 hours. So there's been no delay at the secretary's office. So a combination of all that, I think, is making this work better. And, you know, we've tried to solve problems. I mean, there was an APH issue, you know, which people were very deeply concerned about. We explained it was about prioritization, but our folks at RMA stepped up and found that they got work done because of ARC and PLC. They got work done a little bit quicker than they thought. They had access to data they didn't realize they were going to have, which made the APH issues easier to resolve. Not so much vindication, but I think it underscores an important message. Far too often in this world, we learn of things that do not work. We focus on the negative. We focus on this thing that didn't work or, you know, this system that screwed up. You know, 95% of the stuff actually is working, and that never gets written about or focused on or because it's not news. I think it is news. I think it is important to focus out that there are aspects of government that are working and working pretty well. And that it's not all negative. I mean, I got to tell you, I've been in this job for 6 years, and I guess I've just been surrounded by negativity, and I'm tired of it. So, yeah, we got problems, and we got issues, and we'll deal with them, and when we've done something wrong, we'll admit it. But I'm also going to make sure that people know we're doing stuff right. Yes, Jeff. Holy mackerel, man. You got a halo there. Is that got to be the lights, right? Got to be the lights. It is, Jeff. If you are thinking at it in the old way of doing things like this, where paper files had to be drawn, files had to be opened, producers had to come, it's much more streamlined than it was. I had one producer tell me that they went in and they had two or three farms and they were done in 12 minutes. 12 minutes. They couldn't believe it. That's probably not typical, but it's reflective of the fact that this is a better system and folks are better trained. We spent a lot of time training people, making sure people were comfortable with the new program. So I'm not convinced today that we can't get it done. That's why, but we're going to track it, right? We're going to track it. And at the end of the time, as we get closer to the deadline, may have to make adjustments, may not. But I don't want to necessarily make that decision today because all that will do is it'll create a scenario and situation where instead of 5 weeks, you'd be talking to 7 weeks or 9 weeks. Let's get it done. And well, I don't know that we necessarily have to. A week or two from now, our folks will come back to us, commodity groups will come back to us and say, man, the lines are bad or we just can't get this done or people are going to have to work overtime. I'm not getting that today. Now, granted, we haven't had this onslaught of people. Let's see where it is. And I think we have shown over the course of the last year that when we need to extend something or when we need to be flexible, we will do everything we possibly can. The goal here is not, to Ken's question, it's not to say, okay, you're not going to make this election, by golly, we are. That's not the goal here. The goal is for you to make that election. So we'll see. It's a little premature to make that determination today. A week from now, 2 weeks from now, it may not be. We'll see. Other questions? I can kind of see you.
There is a reflection over here.
Yeah. I don't have the specific regional breakdown in terms of numbers. I just know that there was a challenge that has been presented to us about primarily southern operations on the ownership decision. I would say we probably have, the last time I checked, we were closing in on, let me back up. If you use the number of farms that's based on the census, you're going to include a lot of farms that probably at the end of the day are not particularly interested in doing base acres because we're talking about very, very small operations. So you have to kind of guess what you think that universe of people who are indeed interested in doing this is. And if you're wrong about that, obviously your percentages are going to be wrong. But I think based on our best guess, we probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of roughly 60% of those people we would expect and anticipate to have made that election to have made it. We'll see with this additional time whether or not they're just simply people that are don't need to make the election, don't want to make the election, comfortable with what they got. On the ARC-PLC, we're probably in the neighborhood of 30% of the people, maybe a third of the people, have made that election. So to Jeff's point, we still got a ways to go, but again, we'll see. We've seen remarkable uptick in the last couple of weeks. That number was very, very low just 2 weeks ago, and it's really shot up. So we'll see. We'll see. We know this is an important election for folks. We know it's going to govern their operations for years, and we want to be helpful, and we want to work with them. Well, that's an interesting question. I think, and farmers may answer it differently than I'm going to answer it because we did a survey of producers in the Midwest. I may have mentioned this when I was there in Ames. We did a survey of Midwestern farmers. About 4,000 or 5,000 folks responded. We asked them about climate change, and 80% people said, you know, we don't think there is climate change, or we don't think we can do anything about it. We asked 80% of the folks, well, what do you think about weather variability? They said, hey, we're all on top of that. We really appreciate and understand information about weather variability. So it kind of depends on how you define it. So let me answer it this way. Let's look at agricultural emissions. Okay? What percentage of the overall U.S. emissions is agriculture, and how does that relate and compare to the international farming community? I'm told that our U.S. agricultural emissions are 9%. And that internationally agriculture is at 14%. So that would suggest to me that we're doing better than the rest of the world, which makes sense because we've embraced things from anaerobic digesters to no-till to cover crops, and we're seeing more and more and more of that adoption. I think the challenge, and so there is a positive story. There's a positive story that farmers are reacting and embracing new. They certainly have embraced no-till. They are now, we've seen a 350% increase in cover crops. Our challenge is to make sure that if there are barriers, artificial barriers to the adoption of some of those practices, that we remove them or figure out how to go around them. Cover crop issue is you know, what's the market? How can you justify the expenditure? And it's about education. It's about soil health. And we see, I think, a rather massive effort now by NRCS and farmers around the country to be really focused on, in this International Year of Soil, on soil health. So we're doing well. We're doing better than the rest of the country, or rest of the world. If you add forestry into this, which is part of my department, we're actually in net sink. So then the question is, okay, well, where do we go from here? If we're doing okay, but we have to do better, what are the challenges for agriculture? And here's the challenge. That's a percentage of the American economy. As other aspects of the American economy that have not been as attentive to emissions as the U.S. agricultural industry has, what if they start becoming attentive? What will happen to our percentage? Will it continue to stay at 9% or will it go up? Even though we continue to do a good job, will it go up? So it challenges us to do an even better job. And so what we're doing at USDA is we're putting together a holistic approach, which we'll be launching, I think, fairly soon with more details, that looks at our programs and how we might be able to help producers continue to ratchet down those emission numbers without compromising or jeopardizing their operation. And this question you've asked allows me to sort of amplify a point that I made with the commodity leadership earlier this morning at breakfast. This is exactly the type of thing that I think sort of suggests a new way of thinking in terms of regulatory issues. And that is that what we're going to do is we're going to set a standard. Right, we're going to set a goal. And what I know about American farmers, what I know about Americans, is you set a goal and you give them a roadmap and a pathway to that goal and you make it a little competitive, more times than not, we'll reach or exceed that goal. So what we want to do, and I think that that creates a new opportunity for us. Instead of always focusing on regulating conduct, maybe there's a way in this day and age of setting goals. And with social media and the ability to point out people that aren't meeting goals and the impact that the market ultimately has on folks who aren't meeting goals and how the market adjusts that kind of information, there's a new opportunity here, I think. And I think those of us in government should begin the conversation about exploring that. Is that the new way with social media, with the ability of markets to begin dictating, can, if you educate markets, can they do an even more effective job of getting us to a better place on some of this stuff than even a government agency saying you can't do this or you must do this? Fine and yes. Now, there are a couple things about this. First of all, Congress has directed us to do one thing, which is to label and to designate and identify USA products. That doesn't in and of itself create issues with international trade. That's informing consumers that this product has a U.S. focus. Within the WTO, however, if you create situations in which producers in other states are placed at a unfair disadvantage, then WTO comes in and says you can't do that. And in this case, what WTO, I think, has said is that as soon as you have to segregate livestock, that creates a barrier, an unfair advantage, and that's a problem. So Congress is telling us to do one thing. WTO is telling us, you know, the way you're doing it, you can't do it. Sometimes you can kind of square that hole, but in this particular case, I don't think you can. Which is why in May, when Congress is asking us to report back to them what we're doing about this, we're going to basically tell them the same thing I've been telling them for the last months, is you either have to change the law, you have to repeal the law, section of the law that involves this, or you have to create different instructions that allow us to create a system of labeling that doesn't require segregation, which is like a North American label. And the reason why I don't accept the premise that this runs afoul of international trade is because I think that, with due respect to our friends in Canada and Mexico, I think there's a very significant difference of opinion about precisely how much harm this has in fact caused. And hopefully we never get to a stage where we have to argue that point, because that would mean we're in a retaliation circumstance and defining the level of retaliation. Hopefully we get this thing resolved either by winning the appeal or by Congress taking the steps that they need to take to correct the situation. We've tried, and we've tried a couple times, and we haven't succeeded. So we're out of process here. We're out of ways to approach this. Okay? Thank you all.